The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is a wonderful correspondent, a guy that means a lot to us, Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Well, I've asked you this before, but just remind us, how did you get named Yancey?
They put a bunch of names in a hat and pulled one out.
Is that true? No.
No. As best I can tell, it was a reference to that old TV show, Yancey Derringer, back in
That's
the day.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
You might be old enough to remember that. I'm not.
I do. Well, that's very impressive, I must say. Okay, here we go. COVID. Now, New York is doing relatively well right now, as the governor reminds us. It has quarantines for people from several states coming to New York. And an argument has erupted over whether or not to open the schools. What are you hearing out there?
A couple of things that are happening. From the president on down, a lot of Republicans, including in New York State, are saying that we have to have schools open in this fall. And I think there's a couple of reasons. One, of course, is sort of the philosophical, political arguments about, you know, impacts on the election and viewpoint on the whole handling of COVID. And I think there is also some practical concerns from those folks who are pushing for this. Among them, you can't in-person learning is better than remote learning. What do parents do about daycare if there's no school in come September? So there's a lot of arguments out there. That said, I think the Cuomo administration and the governor has certainly tried to proceed as cautiously as possible, whether it's on a mall reopening or the school reopening. Most times they've had criticism for not acting fast enough about reopening. I think we'll see a decision, and the governor has indicated by early August. So I think they want to let another several weeks go by and see what kind of numbers we get and what kind of structures can be in place in schools to prevent any kind of spread before making a final decision.
So, Yancey Roy, let me ask you this. There's bad blood, I think that's a good way of putting it, between the mayor, de Blasio, in New York City, and the governor. De Blasio says something like, we're going to reopen the schools a couple of days a week. And the governor comes back and says, let's hold off a little bit on this. How much is the bad relationship between the two guys responsible for decision-making?
Well, I think, you know, since they've both been in office, which is now going on, seven and eight year, to get at the same time, they've not been on the same page about a lot of things. And sometimes it has to do with authority and who's calling the shots and who gets the say so. And at the same time, you know, if you get past what they said this week, which was, as you mentioned, the mayor saying we're planning putting together a plan to reopen, and the governor saying, wait a minute, it's my decision, we haven't decided anything. If you get past the day-to-day of that, what you might look for when the decision comes is whether the governor ends up approving an opening, but he, in this case, wasn't just ready to say it, or he wanted to be the one to actually give the go-ahead and not the mayor. Certainly, the governor has never been one to, if he has the authority to call the shots on something, he's usually going to call the shots and not let other elected officials do it.
You know, my theory.
In bottom line, you might end up, it's not inconceivable, but they end up with the same viewpoint and in the same place at the end of things. But the governor is asserting that it's my call, not yours, Mayor de Blasio.
I think part of that got started in the very beginning. As you say, they both assumed office. De Blasio, I think, thought he was going to be president of the United States. And naturally, when you're governor, that's something you think about, too, although he denies it. So it is interesting that de Blasio is not going to be president of the United States ever, as they say in the Bronx, ever. But the feud continues.
Recall how it started on an issue that is, you know, this is an issue that's important. It was about the funding of pre-kindergarten and full-day kindergarten, and how are you going to pay for it, and is it going to be with taxes, or, you know, is it going to be expanded immediately or gradually? Look, it's a very important issue, especially if your child is in that age group. But at the same time, compared to some of the issues they've dealt with over the last 8 years, I mean, it's probably smaller than a lot of other issues, but it was just from that very one about who was going to call the shots and who's going to, you know, they didn't agree on that from the very beginning when de Blasio got in the office. And it's kind of played out that same way ever since.
I'm fascinated by the nursing home thing. Now, at one point, I believe Andrew had a 76% approval rate. It may have been 75, but let's not quibble over the point. Now he's down to 65. And a lot of people are playing gotcha with him over the nursing home situation. His argument is, hey, that's not my fault. We heard it from the Centers for Disease Control and the rest of them, and they were saying this is what you have to do. You have to find a place for people who test positive in nursing homes. And he has gotten hell for that. It's almost as if people don't even understand what the issue is all about, but he really is getting beaten up. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a couple of pieces there to look at. I recall that back at the start of the management of the pandemic a couple of months ago, when the governor, issued shutdown orders for businesses and tried to determine what's essential or not essential businesses, he said, if people get mad, blame me. It's my decision. I made the decision. Yeah. That's not quite the same approach he's taken on nursing homes, as you noted. He has caught a lot of flack for a policy that was implemented in March that said nursing homes could not refuse admittance of a COVID patient transferred back from, say, a hospital. Now, their caveat has been, we always said, if you don't have the facilities or the wherewithal to take these patients, you shouldn't take them. So that's where the policy was. And now there has been a lot of deaths in nursing homes, not only in New York, but also in other states. We're talking here about the Cuomo administration issued a report this week saying its policy, issued back in March, was not to blame, but rather nursing home employees, staff, and others who at the beginning of the pandemic probably came in with it, and that's how it spread. And a couple of things to note here. One is the report that they issued is sort of like the Cuomo administration investigating a Cuomo administration policy and finding that the Cuomo administration policy is not to blame, which Republicans and other critics immediately seized on as, like, tainted. And I think what you're going to see relatively soon is the state legislature, which is controlled by Democrats like Cuomo, are going to conduct their own hearings about the whole issue. Now, that said, it doesn't mean that the Cuomo administration's contention that there was employees and people coming in and out of nursing homes that were more to blame for this. That doesn't mean that that's not the actual case. But I think that the political problem that they find themselves in, again, is go back to what we just talked about, was that it was his administration investigating his policy. And so people, critics and certainly Republicans, are not ready to accept the full findings of it.
Well, now, the Republicans, for their part, have very little to be joyful about in New York State right now.
Sure.
Obviously, they don't own control of the Senate. Reapportionment is coming up. And I can guarantee you that the Democratic hold on the Senate will be made stronger by the next gerrymander, don't you think?
Well, you step back one and say that part of the reason why the Senate was controlled by Republicans for decades, even though New York was increasingly becoming a more and more and more Democratic state, is that the Republicans were in charge of redistricting for the Senate, and they gerrymandered the lines to make every upstate and Long Island district as favorable as possible to the GOP. And that's how they were, you know, arguably able to hold on to one arm of power for maybe a decade or so more than demographics might have suggested. So now, finally, after all this time, Democrats are getting their first shot to draw the lines themselves, which would happen likely in 2022. And you can't help but think the lines are going to be very much different than what they were drawn in 2012. And the question will be, at the end of the day, do people think they're fairly drawn, or do they think the Democrats ended up doing the same thing as the Republicans did, which is make everything as favorable as possible to their own party?
I predict it will be the second.
you wouldn't be going out on a limb.
No, they'll do what they can to preserve their majority, that's for sure. Now, the other part of this is the congressman. Now, the rules were, right? The assembly will make sure we win. Not that they weren't going to win anyway, because it's a blue state. The Senate said, we're going to make sure we win. And they, as you just profoundly said, they made sure that the gerrymander made for the best possible districts. Then one day they looked at the great computer on the wall and the Senate leader and said, draw me districts where we can't lose. And the great computer looked back and said, sorry, there are not enough Republicans to make it work anymore. And they lost the state Senate. But the Congress, when they used to fight between the assembly and the Senate, that had to be adjudicated by the courts, right?
Yeah, a couple of things to note there. The congressional plan tended to be bipartisan historically. Either you had a couple of scenarios. Either it was a bipartisan agreement, especially in years where New York was going to lose seats, which is likely going to happen again, all but assured to happen again. Well, it's basically assured to happen again. I can think back, and you can remember this. There were days back in 2002 where the state was going to lose two seats, and kind of bipartisan arrangement, basically each side agreed to give up a seat. In the case of Democrats, it was a Western New York seat. I believe it was John LaFalce. And in the Republicans' case, it was Ben Gilman, you might remember, from the Hudson Valley, whose seat was kind of wiped out. But that's because, go back to what we said before, the Republicans had control of the state Senate. Now, that's different. Democrats have both houses. And right, to the extent that New York will lose seats, there's no longer going to be this sort of backroom arrangement that says, okay, Republicans, we'll give up one. Democrats, you give up one. Name your own seat you're going to give up. The Republicans don't have that kind of leverage now. As we go into redistricting, reapportionment, which will happen in 2022. So if you're the GOP, you've got to be really worried about what they're going to do to your congressional districts in New York.
And we have seen it. Texas, I'll never forget it. They wiped out all the Democrats. They sent them packing just by the way that things were reapportioned.
Yeah, it's been a sort of unfortunate way it's played out in some ways across many states. It's in that the party in power in that state ends up trying to kind of wipe out the other party, like you, to use your word, but and no sort of consideration for what's supposed to be the sort of civics class idea of this, which is to create representative districts within states.
Exactly. Well, okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about police reform, because that's coming up. New York City's police budget, which was massive, has lost $1 billion. That sounds like a lot, but compared to the total budget, it wasn't that much. What are the politics of the situation?
Well, they're still playing out. A couple of things that have happened this week. New York State Attorney General issued a preliminary report about looking at the handling of the Floyd protest over the last few weeks. And kind of said that there needs to be increased oversight. Maybe there should be things such as diluting the power of the NYPD commissioner and making him more responsible to a board or a commission, which would have more powers. Also looking at practices of the police. And at the same time, some other developments this week. Anyone who's been watching the news knows that there has been a surge in gunplay in various communities around the state. But a report this week by the New York Post, breaking down statistics, found that there was no connection between the increased gunplay and some of the criminal justice reforms that were enacted and put into place beginning January 1. So you've got all of this swirl of issues. You've got police brutality all brought to the fore by the Floyd protest. You've got criminal justice reform in New York. You've got COVID and how that is affecting what's going on in communities. So it's all very volatile right now. The legislature is going to come back into session at the end of this month and maybe other times this year. But the police issue is something that's probably going to continue for a while into next year.
In the meantime, you have a presidential election that is coming up, obviously. Now, we have state races, but we also are very much a prisoner of what's going to happen in the presidential election. So, is it your estimation, Yancey Roy, that what's going to happen here is that we are likely to see a huge anti-Trump turnout in New York, which will make for a great joyous feeling among the blue actors here?
I think that it's clear that Donald Trump is still the number one overarching election issue in New York and probably other states as well. To the extent that, you know, sometimes state legislation or local bills or local issues come into play. You know, we just mentioned criminal justice. Certainly the Republicans in New York State have bashed the criminal justice changes in New York, bail, discovery, et cetera, and trying to use that, get ready to use that as an election issue this fall.
In other words, bail reform, letting people out of jail who were
too soft on crime.
Sentences.
Right.
Yes.
Right. The Democrats have been too soft on crime, and that's why you need to elect Republicans or put us back in power in the Senate or what have you. That's right now their best card to play, probably, in terms of election issues. But at the same time, given what's going on across the nation, given the interest in the presidential election, given the fact that essentially so much of the news cycle has become nationalized, too, in a way, there's so much attention paid to Trump and the White House and the Supreme Court and everything, that national politics have become just an overarching issue for the election. And to the extent that New York is a very Democratic, very blue state, that's going to be good for Democrats and probably not good for Republicans.
How does that nationalization of the news affect somebody like you, Yancey Roy, a star reporter on state politics and always have been and have great respect? But does what you say when you go to your editors with a hot story get affected by that?
And no, it doesn't, and so much in the specific details, right? But I think that the sort of news appetite, and I'm just speaking generally for people, you've seen it, is like there's way more interest in the national issues. You know, people you probably meet or talk to on the phone or email talk to you about Trump and the Supreme Court and Congress and Nancy Pelosi. And to an extent, that's more so than Governor Cuomo or maybe even what's happening with your hometown mayor or your county legislature. I'm not the first one to say that. There's just like the whole cycle, the whole series of whether it's, you know, cable news or Twitter or, you know, collapse sometimes of local news coverage. Everything is just driving sort of a more national view on what's going on in the news.
What are we hearing about Cuomo's political circumstances? You know, there were a lot of people who wrote to me and said Cuomo, because he was on CNN every day, that Cuomo should be the candidate. But we all knew, and Cuomo said from the beginning, that wasn't going to happen. Then there was talk about being a vice presidential candidate. And he had already said he would have a woman, and there's a general feeling there'll be a woman of color. So where does that leave Cuomo? He says he'll run for a fourth term, something that was denied to his father. What if Joe Biden comes along and says to Cuomo, now in his 50s, I believe, you know, go ahead and become my attorney general of the United States? Or will he stick around?
A lot of cards to be played between now and November. And I think those are all great questions, and none of them get answered until sometime after Election Day, which by the way, it's everyone should get prepared for maybe not Election Day, but Election Week this time around, what with the issues of voting and COVID and probably much more absentee balloting. around the country. But to get back to your point, you know, I think it's way too early to say. It's not even guaranteed yet that we know who's going to win the presidential election. And it's only after that that you can kind of start to see some of the pieces start to be moved around the political board. And as far as the governor running for a fourth term, I mean, look, a couple of things about governors in general, and really politicians as well, unless you're facing term limits, you always say that you plan on running again until the sure. day that you're not, because there's a couple of practical reasons you do that. One is, frankly, fundraising. If you say that you might not run at all, then all of your fundraising dries up.
Nobody wants second to invest all, in you.
Right. And second of all, if you're a governor dealing with a legislature, you know, they feel that we now have the upper hand and we have leverage and we can do what we want because you're not sticking around. And so not just Cuomo, but look at Governor George Pataki, for example. It was he got to midway through his third term. Things started getting a little rocky. Nobody expected him to run for a fourth term, but he kept raising money throughout his third term in office mm-hmm. until the day he announced, I'm not running again. And so that's kind of standard for almost any politician who, again, is if you're not facing a term limit, you are always running until the day you say you're not.
Let's shift the focus back to Cuomo here. There are Republicans and now some Democrats who are saying they gave away the store. He has almost dictatorial powers. They gave him too much power, and they want to take some of it back. Any chance that's going to happen?
Well, remember, most of the people saying that are Republicans in the state
Without
legislature
question.
who have no leverage whatsoever of making something happen other than trying to use their own bully pulpit and try to pressure and bring an issue out into the public. That said, I think there are some Democrats who are chafed at the governor's use of emergency powers and feeling like, you know, he's issuing all the decisions himself. But that said, there are some practical concerns here. You know, there's a lot of actions that the governor took at the beginning of this that whether you agree with him or not on it, certainly just from an expediency viewpoint of people, I think, generally accepting the idea that shutdowns needed to happen fast. If you had to go through a legislature, that could have taken forever. So the question is, going forward, how long do they continue to allow him to use these emergency powers? I think it easily goes through, frankly, the rest of the year. It's hard to see them coming back to roll it back at any point during this year, unless something unpredictable happens right now. So even though some lawmakers are chasing, even so some Democrats have chased at the use of his powers, whether they actually come to Albany and vote on a bill to revoke those powers, that's a much greater step, and it's hard to see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, well, they are going to come back, and they, you know, a lot of people have a lot of bills, but
sure.
The real question is, how much money does the state have to spend? And Cuomo says, well, it was $16 billion in the hole, and I'm not going to budge until the federal government comes up with that $16 billion or something like it. And so everybody is on hold as a result of that. You can't spend what you don't have. He keeps saying that. He said it to me.
Yeah, and at the same time, they haven't, like, made actual big cuts because, I mean, you know, we just had school district elections and school budgets around the state, and essentially they froze school districts at what they had last year, which is kind of a little bit of a promise there because the state says it doesn't have enough money to fund everything unless we get help from the federal government. And at the same time, they basically budgeted the same amount for schools, which is the single biggest item of the state budget, along with Medicaid. So I think there's this, well, it's this strategy that's playing out. I think they know, look, no politician wants to do cuts, generally speaking. No politician certainly wants to do any mid-year school cuts, which is, it would be dramatic. So I think what they're doing is they're warning about cuts. They're saying it's possible, but at the same time, they're going to string it out as long as possible till we get some sort of help from the federal government, or until the stock market or the economy slowly starts to come back. And the bottom line will be, if they have to go back and make cuts in state funding or anything to state schools, it's going to be a last resort after they've exhausted every other avenue.
We see that people can't pay the rent, people can't pay the mortgages. What are the political implications of all that?
There is a push, especially among progressive Democrats, to do some sort of forbearance program. I know activists and groups have started Cancel Rent, a hashtag Cancel Rent, or the Cancel Rent movement, which essentially says, you know, landlords don't collect rent. I don't know that that actually is going to have widespread traction in the legislature, not so because it goes too far for a lot of legislators. I think what's more likely is for them to work on more forbearance issues, such as, you know, you push back your mortgage an extra 6 months and you don't have to pay these. It'll be the avenues like that where they consider laws like that rather than any kind of action where they would actually try to cancel rent, which would have all sorts of ramifications for the landlords and then the tax revenues and then the school districts.
Finally, Yancey Roy, I guess I want to ask you this, and that is, and it has to be fast, but we had some primaries in New York. Anything that really caught your eye?
I think the results in Westchester County were interesting, where progressive Democrats really did well. I think it's a continued push from the left to get more progressive people in there, sort of get some of the old politicians out. I think those were the most striking that we saw on primary day.
Well, Yancey, as always, you were terrific. We're out of time. Our guest has been Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, I know how busy you are. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.